The PGA Tour presents the fusion of golf, music, sports, and entertainment. Golf Talk America, streaming live on PGATour.com. Follow us today and every day on Twitter at Golf Talk America. Now, the Golf Talk America crew.
Well, hello once again, everybody. Welcome to Golf Talk America. Tim Matthews with you today. And, we're looking forward to the Quicken Loans National. It's the next stop on the PGA Tour and a pretty good field at the TPC Potomac at Evanell Farms in Potomac, Maryland. And a good field, actually, week after week. I tell you, you keep thinking some of the big guys take some time off, and a lot of them do. But there's enough good guys going around. It used to be where it was all about Tiger. If Tiger's playing, it's a big tournament. If he's not, then everybody's kind of like, ah. But now it's spread out. And so we have a very good field. We'll talk about that a little bit today and see what's going to happen there at the Quicken Loans. We're still on a high from what happened on Sunday in Connecticut at the Travelers Championship. And Jordan Spieth, with a little bit of drama that he pulled out of his hip pocket on that playoff hole, still got a lot of people talking about it. And certainly the reaction to holding out from that 60-foot bunker shot is still getting a lot of people talking about it on Golf Channel and everywhere else. So still some drama over that. We're also joined by, as always, Frank Bassett in our Nashville studios. Frank, how you doing today?
Doing good. Doing good. Still can't good. Can't believe that shot. I just can't believe it. It was unbelievable. Yeah. The way he played the whole time, I didn't see that coming. I just didn't. And I didn't see Boo Weekly collapsing like he did. So
I guess he's getting, you know, at 43, and we're going to talk to a little bit over 43 PGA Tour player in a minute here. Paul Stankowski will join us. But, you know, sometimes the nerves do get a little bit to you, and that's one of the things I'm going to talk to Paul about is, you know, versus the young bucks. And it certainly seemed like maybe nerves were getting to Jordan Spieth because he was playing very defensively. Daniel Berger was chasing him down, and Spieth was just not being aggressive and trying to get birdies to win the tournament. He was trying to kind of hang on. And he did hang on long enough to get to that final hole. But even then, Frank, right, he hits a tree. He has 230 yards for his second shot. Okay, well, this
solid,
is all falling apart
solidly
now.
Hit the tree.
Yeah, but it fell into the fairway, so luckily for him. But you're not in any way after those tee shots thinking he's in any kind of a position. And that's just golf, isn't it?
I jumped up. When he hit the tee shot, I jumped up because I was watching Shot Tracker and went, oh, my God. I said, he's pulled that into the next county. It's gone. This is OB. Yeah. I thought it was over for him.
Yeah.
Wow.
Lucky he hit the tree.
Well,
that's
the game.
He played it perfect and put it in the bunker. It was history.
Yeah. Jordan, what'd you get on that hole? Well, I got an oak, a birch, and two pines. Thank you.
Seriously. And a trophy.
And a trophy.
All
and a check.
I walked away with the trophy. As I said, Paul Stankowski joined us today as well. Paul, how you doing today?
Guys, I'm doing well. And, man, Jordan Spieth, he's just lucky. I'm just kidding.
Isn't he the luckiest guy?
He's pretty good. He always seems to find himself in good position. And, I think the reason he wasn't going at all those pins is because he relies on his putter anyway. And he knows he's either going to make a 30-foot bomb or a 60-foot uphill bunker shot. And it's pretty impressive. I was more impressed with his club toss simultaneously with Michael's rake toss. And then, Webb Simpson tweeted, I think one of the best tweets of the year, something about a golfer finally and caddy finally have choreographed a great celebration. It was pretty awesome and obviously dramatic.
Yeah. Hey, Paul, I told Tim in pre-show, I said, here would be a great magazine cover would be Jordan and Michael in bib coveralls, like the old Norman Rockwell picture in front of the barn, Ma and Pa Kettle with the shovel and the rake. But, you know, Michael has the rake and Jordan's holding the club in the exact position from which he threw the toss, right? I think that would be a hilarious cover. Maybe Global Golf Post or somebody will come up with that idea. I'm sure they'll listen and come up with the idea.
I don't know if they planned it, but they certainly did.
It was pretty cool.
They had it coordinated pretty well because if Jordan had thrown that club a little bit differently, it would have been up in the crowd or into Michael's head or somewhere. So he kind of threw it in the right place because I thought, man, he whipped it. I mean, you could tell he just threw that thing hard. And so, it was really – it was a lot of fun to watch the drama of that and see how it all shook out, if you will.
It reminded me of the Nicklaus putter toss. Remember when Nicklaus, and I can't remember the tournament, but he he makes the putt and throws the putter up in the air, and then he covers his head because he doesn't know where it's gone.
Yeah, yeah.
Celebration.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Did you have a good celebration,
Paul? I think there's some
tournaments?
Of that was with Jordan was, you know, relief. You know, I mean, obviously excitement, but then obviously relief. I mean, he was hitting some pretty crummy shots. The tee shot wasn't very good. And whether he was leaking oil or you know, feeling the pressure. I mean, we're always feeling the pressure to win. I don't care who you are down the stretch. But I'm sure it was more of a relief. That bunker shot's not easy. I mean, it's a long bunker shot. Wow. It's up the hill there. And it wasn't like it was an easy – the shot he hit to win John Deere, I mean, heck, that ball might have gone in the water. But it doesn't hit the pin, slam right. dunk in. But much different golf shot it's just great. It's great for TV. It's great for the sport. Everybody's still talking about it, you know, and it's pretty cool stuff.
We're talking with PGA Tour veteran Paul Stankowski about the end of the Travelers Championship and Jordan Spieth. And so when it was all over and done and he wins, and Berger gave it a good run from, what, about 50, 55 feet, only missed by a foot or so with his birdie putt attempt that everybody was almost like, an afterthought. And then it's like, oh, that got pretty close. It was... he got in there. So Jordan wins it, and now he and Tiger Woods are the only guys to get 10 victories before their 24th birthday. So while we kind of have thought, well, Jordan had that great run, but now he's kind of – a lot of people are saying it's not quite the same. And maybe he'll never have another run like that because it was a phenomenal year that he had a couple of years ago. But, Paul, it's hard. Anytime your name is in there with Tiger Woods for anything – it seems like it's pretty heady company. So Spieth is maybe not where he was a couple years ago, winning five or six tournaments, but 10 before 24 is pretty impressive, isn't it?
Yeah, that is impressive. And obviously he's a super talented player. And you know, the thing is, though, there are a lot of talented players. I think, you know, what Tiger did back in the late 90s, early 2000s is astonishing. But then also, I think he spurred on a lot of young players to want to be great, and to you know, for a lot of PGA Tour players, just getting there is the cool thing. And then, you know, you hope to win. You know how hard it is to win, and you win one, you kind of go, all right, cool. You know, most is 99.9% of the PGA Tour players. Who actually win, may only win once or twice. You know, they're not winning 10 times before 24 years old. So it's more of a, I mean, it's obviously he's in rarefied air, if you will. But he's super talented. The thing is, the tour's chock full now of super talented players. Daniel Berger is scrappy, and didn't surprise me at all that he was in the mix. And, you know, you got the old guys like Boo Weekly. You know, if you have a PGA Tour card, you've done something, and you have the ability to do something every week. And unfortunately for most, you know, you may have a handful of opportunities during the year. But for guys like Jordan Spieth and the rest of the great players out there on tour, you know, they're probably going to be in the mix most weeks. And then when their putter's hot, and maybe they drive it in the fairway, they're going to have a chance to win. And so it's fun watching guys win, but it's also fun watching the great players go through their slumps and watch what they do and see if they change things. And, you know, the great ones, they just kind of keep going. You know, you don't have to reinvent the wheel. If Jordan goes through a, you know, 4 or 5 week stretch where he's not looking very good, he doesn't have to reinvent anything. Just keep his nose to the grindstone and you know, things are going to turn around. And, he did it in dramatic fashion.
So Jordan Spieth now moves up to number 3 in the world golf rankings. And Paul's still talking and relating this to Tiger Woods. And Dustin Johnson has a pretty healthy grasp of the top spot in the world rankings. He has about a 4-point lead, a little bit more than that, which is a big lead over Hideki Matsuyama at number 2 and then Jordan Spieth at number 3. And Jordan's moving up on Hideki, so has another good week or two. He could be number 2. But back in the day of Tiger, and back when you were playing and competing with Tiger, he held that spot, and he almost doubled up the points. Remember that, where he hit the point total would be like 14, and then Phil would be second, or somebody else would be second, and they'd have like 6 or 7 in the point total. He had such a big lead, and it was always that way. Nowadays, as we're talking, you know, now Rory has dropped down to 4. Jason Day was number 1 for a good length of time. Now he's down to 5. we may never see another Tiger, obviously, but it was a different time then, and I think people start to fade and forget a little bit about Tiger. He was unbelievably dominant, wasn't he, back when we're talking about here in the late 90s, all the way up until about 2010. It was almost like what Ernie Els said. Everybody else is kind of playing for second place. He was that good.
Oh, my, yeah, yeah. It was crazy. I mean, every time Tiger was in the field, obviously the TV ratings shot up, tournament ratings shot up. He knew he was going to win, and we knew he was going to win, and he knew that we knew that he was going to win, and that whole thing. So it's one of those it was exciting. He brought a different level of excitement to professional golf, I think. You know, a lot of people over the years, I would hear, you know, golf is just boring. It's a bunch of guys in khakis and yada, yada, yada. We've heard it for many years. Tiger, he was electrifying. His fist pumps, he got the crowd going. You know, John Daly brought a lot of people out to watch golf, but it was a different, it was almost an unruly crowd following Daly a little bit. They just wanted to see him hit the driver, you know, if he pulled out an iron off of a par four tee box, you know, they would really talk him into hitting driver. And so you didn't see JT laying up much. With Tiger, it was different. It wasn't just about his driver, although he did hit the ball a long way. There were a few guys that hit it up in his stratosphere, but it was, you know, getting out of trouble, the flair for the dramatic, just the never being out of it. It was like Nicklaus making his charges. You know that was obviously before my time, but I watched enough of it as a kid on TV to know that Jack was that way. And there aren't many guys that did what they did, and a lot of fun. But right now, I keep saying it, the last 3 or 4 years, like, golf's in a good spot, professional golf. It's different. There's a lot of guys in the mix. And it seems like these guys are kind of friendly. You know, they kind of like each other, and it's fun battling back. You've seen, you know, fist pumps over the last couple of years, or fist bumps, if you will. Two guys battling down the stretch. Somebody does something kind of good, and there's a fist bump going on there. And you know, I think Rory complained about that a couple of years ago and said that that's ridiculous. You know, I'm trying to beat that guy. I don't want to give him encouragement, but I still think it's fun watching these guys battle, and things would happen, like what just happened in Hartford, are great for the game.
And Berger gave him the thumbs up and then a low five on the playoff hole.
No, so, exactly. Well, it's golf a gentleman's game, right? That's how we've been labeled for you know, 100 years. It's a gentleman's game. So, and we're also, the thing is, all these guys that are playing every week, they're sports fans, right? They love dramatic. They love drama. They love the action. And so even though Daniel Berger is trying to win a golf tournament, and he's looking at Jordan's bunker going, this is not an easy bunker shot. I know in his mind he's going, I think I got him. And then what does Jordan do? He holds it. Boom. I mean, and so Daniel's like, well, way to go, bud. You know, that's pretty awesome. Because it's fun to watch, even though you might be the recipient of, you know, a kick to the teeth, if you will. It's still fun to watch. It's sport.
By the schedule that we're taking a look at, again, we're talking with Paul Stankowski. Down the road, not too far, we've got the Open Championship, Royal Birkdale, the next major on the schedule, and everybody's going to be aiming for that and pointing for that, whether or not they play this week in the Quicken Loans or Greenbrier or John Deere heading to the Open Championship. What kind of a drama do you expect there, and who are you looking forward to as we look for the next major and the next major champion? Who you think? Because I guess I'm getting to this point, Jason Day just seems like he's kind of been fading, and certainly he's had some issues off the course, which we all sympathize with, and his mother's health and other things. But Jason just doesn't seem to be the same player, not even making cuts oftentimes. Rory, kind of hot, kind of cold, made the cut barely at the Travelers and then had a good final round, but he's not really in contention. So the top guys, are there some that you see kind of going north and some you see going south that we could look forward to when they head over to Southport, England?
Well, you know, I mean, golf is about well, all sports are really about managing your distractions, right? Everybody's going to have distractions of some sort, whether it's at home, family, equipment, you know, agent, you know, whatever it is, right? There's distractions everywhere. And the great players are able to kind of grind through the distraction and, you know, hold it at bay as best you can. Okay. Those who do that are going to have a better chance of winning. So Jason Day, obviously at one point everyone thought, oh my gosh, this guy's going to be, he's the best ever. Right. And then 2 weeks later, it's somebody else doing something, and it's Justin Thomas, and then it's Matsuyama. And then it's, you know, it's like, we can't, like, it's a revolving door of greatness, right? Every week it's somebody different, or every month. And DJ is number one in the world right now. And when he's on, he looks invincible. When Jordan's on, he looks invincible. When Jason's on, he looks invincible. When Rory's on, he looks invincible. Okay. So there's all these guys that have this, greatness. But when distraction comes in, and there's no question that Jason Day is distracted, you know, with family stuff and what's going on with his mom. And those are things that they're real, they're life. Sometimes you look at the game of golf and you go, this is a game, right? This is a game. It's not that big a deal. And when that happens, one of two things can happen. You can either kind of check out a little bit because you think, you know, I got more important things to do than try to hit this little golf ball around. Or you keep doing it. And I don't know how these guys are handling that, but I do know that it doesn't take much for the game to turn back on, especially for guys like that who are great, that, you know, get a little internal desire back, start getting a couple tee shots exactly like you want it. All of a sudden, you're back in the mix, you taste it, you like it, and you want more. And that's what I think we see with a lot of these guys. So coming the next major, I think you're going to see the usual suspects. You're going to see a couple guys like Daniel Berger that are knocking at the door. It was great to see Brooks Koepka. You know, the guy's got a ton of talent, no question. Would he win? Well, he did. He proved us all wrong, or not wrong. He proved himself that he can win this thing, a major championship, and he's a major champion. I think he's going to win more. That's what I mean by golf's in a great spot. These majors, there's a bunch of guys that can win them now. I think we are done with the Tiger Woods type golf. There's too many great players. We were beat mentally when Tiger was in the mix. You don't see these guys beat mentally now when anybody's in the field, because they all know they can beat each other. So I don't know who's going to win. It's a major. It's going to be fun, but I think you're going to see I think Daniel Berger is going to have a good shot at winning a major here in the next couple of years. And you know, obviously the usual suspects.
Well, Paul, you're like Golf Talk America's savant, is how I look at you. You're a philosopher, Paul. So in that same realm and what you just talked about, I'm curious, you were there again as a reference with Tiger and seeing Tiger at his peak and how well he could play. People talk today about if you had to pick a player, and it's probably either Dustin or Rory that gets most of the peers' votes of being the most talented golfer out there. So why aren't either of those guys, and they certainly, I don't know if they have as much talent as Tiger, but they certainly have an abundance of talent. But yet, Tiger would not, he'd go 7 years without missing a cut. He just could not stand to see him have himself not play well. And there's a different mindset. And so I'm kind of curious, as the wise soothsayer that you are, what is that different mindset? Why are Rory and Dustin sometimes on, sometimes not? They miss cuts at the U.S. Open. They can't. That would never happen to Tiger while he was where they're at in their primes. What was the difference? What is the difference between Tiger back then and these guys today that don't seem to have that same? Maybe it's a mental toughness. I'm not sure what, but what is the difference, do you think?
Well, I think it's a greatness is an intangible. You can't teach it, right? And there's no question that Tiger Woods is better than Rory and Dustin right now. I mean, he was in this generation. I can't speak on Nicklaus. Nicklaus's records are unbelievable. But as far as from say 1985 on or 86 on, Tiger's the best ever, in that time frame and to win what, I don't know, 80 events. How many did he win? 70 events, 80,
75.
He was better. And so there again, I'm not a savant. I don't know. I can't peer into his mind, but something tells me that he was better mentally. He was more singularly focused. His main focus was winning tournaments and major championships. Obviously he had other things that interested him in life, but it didn't appear. It appeared that his whole main focus was to kick everybody's butt when he stepped onto the golf course at a tournament. And I don't know, maybe there are more things going on these days, and guys are, you know, golf is just one of what they do. And but not to take anything away from Rory and DJ, and those guys are great. And I just think that what we saw with Tiger Woods was just not of this world.
Once in a generation kind of thing. You might not see it again in our lifetime.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's probably some 6'9" guy that's going to come out that's going to hit the ball 425 yards with pinpoint accuracy and not miss a putt for a whole entire year like Tiger did. Maybe then. But it's golf, man. That little golf ball, it doesn't matter if you're, you know, Fred Funk playing against Dustin Johnson. The objective is to get the ball in the hole. So Fred Funk might be hitting 5-iron where DJ's hitting a wedge. But Funky can hit it in there 10 feet and make the putt and win the hole, right? I mean, so it's just because you do one thing really well. DJ drives the ball crazy long and now can hit a nice little butter cut out there at 320 yards, right? Who can do that? I can't. I swing as hard as I can. I hit it 280 downhill, downwind on ice. So it's having the ability to be a great bunker player doesn't make you great. Or a great putter doesn't make you great. Or a long driver of the golf ball doesn't make you great. It definitely helps to have those arrows in the quiver, but you still got to get the ball in the hole. And some of these guys seem to do it every stinking week. Some guys do it a handful times of the year, you know. So I don't know. There's that intangible. You can't teach it. There's never been a book written that will teach you how to be great in golf. There's not, and there won't be, because you can't teach it. It just happens. You can teach skill, and these guys all have it. They all look different. Jordan, I probably wouldn't teach that golf swing. I probably wouldn't teach DJ's golf swing. It hurts my wrist to even think about putting mine in that position at the top of the swing. Daniel Berger aims way the heck left. You wouldn't teach that, right? These guys all look different when they're over a golf ball. Phil Mickelson, I don't think you teach that swing. But I guarantee you one thing, you don't tell them to stop doing what they're doing. They've got it in them to be great and to learn to hit a golf ball, because it's not about golf swing, right? Plenty of pretty golf swings on the mini tour driving ranges that never made it or never will make it. And there's a lot of flappy guys that have done great. The, you know, Ed Fiore's, the Paul Azinger's, the, you know, swings that are different. DJ Singh, you know, Jim Furyk, for crying out loud. So that's the cool thing. You look at these top guys, they all swing different. Adam Scott's beautiful golf swing. DJ, interesting top of the move. But it doesn't really matter. These guys are the guys who are great. There's something that makes them great, right?
Yep.
That's true. That's true. Hey, we're talking swing, but I want to back up to McIlroy for a minute. Get your opinion, Paul. We were joking that he's probably now traveling with two travel bags because one's full of putters. I mean, can you change three putters in one? What is going on with that?
In a tournament?
Yeah.
Day to day almost? Yeah.
What's wrong with that? That's what I did my whole career.
Really?
You know,
I didn't realize it.
When you're struggling, that's what happens.
God.
Okay. When you have it dialed in, you don't go to the club equipment trailer. You don't have extra clubs in your bag. You're locked and loaded. You might have a backup that's exactly the same. Like, you want to have a backup driver that you feel like you can, it doesn't matter which one you hit, you're going to hit them exactly the same, right? When you have different putters, you know, I used to putt with like seven different styles, not a putter, of stroke and grip and posture. And I might hit one putt, my feet together, standing tall like Ray Floyd, and the next hole, if I missed it, you know, I was putting like Tom Watson. And then the next, if I missed that one, I was like, okay, this is Jack Nicklaus. And I was always fidgeting, and probably because I wasn't making pots, which is why I'm talking to you guys here from my couch. But
But I digress.
The guys who are putting well, they're not fidgeting. They're not. They don't have four different putter styles in their bag. You know, they have the same stuff. They just come on. Where are we at today, boys? And that's it. So anyway, it's just evidence. Him carrying those is evidence that he's not comfortable with the flat stick. That's all. And when he does, and he starts making some putts, he'll narrow it down. But doubt is the biggest killer of any job, right? If you're fearful, when the light goes on, if you're a TV personality, you're gonna look like a moron. If you're fearful on the first tee of the tournament, or putting at the Masters, and you have the yips like Ernie did a couple years ago, you're going to look foolish. Doubt is a killer, and so if you doubt that the equipment you have in your bag is working, you're probably going to have a few extra pieces with you in hopes that you can find something that's going to work. Right? That's what we do, but. It just shows that he's not comfortable. And one of these days, he's going to have one putter in his bag, and we're going to forget about this conversation.
Yeah, well, I guess you're right. I'm sitting here with, let's see, I'm in the studio. There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I think there's 7 putters in here. So I shouldn't be talking, but I stick with pretty much one. But
you know, it's funny. I hear you, Frank, and it is about one. I putted with a Zing 2, Ping Zing 2.
Oh, yeah.
After watching Curtis Strange win the U.S. Open 2 years in a row, what was that, 89, 90 or something like that? No, 80. I forget what it was. It was a long time ago. But
88, 89, maybe.
I started using the Ping Zing 2, and I used it through the end of my high school in college, all the way through 1997, it was a Zing 2. I used the black one. I used the silver one, but I used the Zing 2, and then I switched. Well, I brought the Zing 2 to the PGA show this past January. I always need, when I'm in the booth, I need to have a club in my hand because I don't know what to do with my hands otherwise. So they're just like, I need something to hold on to. It's like my blanket. My security blanket. So anyway, I brought the Zing 2 out, and I just carried that around at the PGA show in my booth, and I was putting, and it felt good. I'm like, man, I did all my damage with this putter. This is what I played well with. This is what I won with. And ever since I stopped using that Zing 2, I didn't win anymore. So I brought it out, and so when I got home, it went in my bag, and I'm like, I'm using this now on. It's really light. You know, the old equipment, Ping stuff was always really light anyway. And I putted pretty good with it for a few weeks. Well, I took it to Bandon Dunes 3 weeks ago, and I had 10 three putts the first 2 days. It was windy, and the greens were slow, and I looked like a 18 handicapper on the greens. And so I got home, and that went right back into the garage again.
Time out. Yeah.
And I brought out my old faithful that I putted with the last like 10 years on tour, some Odyssey Triforce 1, black insert face, not new technology, no milled marks, none of that kind of stuff. It's just another, and now I putt good again. I'm like, it's, you know, we always go through these, what, you know, maybe this can be better. But when it's working, you don't think about it.
Right. Well, that's true. I'm going through all sorts of changes with the irons. Not my woods, not my Titleist woods, but I can't find any irons that I really like right now. I don't know what to do, so I don't know.
Well, you can figure it out, Frank. And the funny thing, though, Paul, is, and again, we're talking with Paul Stankowski, is that people think, okay, I can relate to what Paul's saying because I am an 18 handicapper, 20 hand, 10 handy.
Sandbagger.
But it's weird because a lot of people don't think, but a lot of people don't think a Rory McIlroy would have that same. Why would you doubt if you're Rory McIlroy? Why would you have any question about that? So that's the interesting part about it is how a guy who is that talented, who sits at home on the couch like you are right now, but says, I know I'm one of the best players in the world, and yet I've got 9 putters, you know, and I got to go through all that. So it's a scary little thing, isn't it, that doubt can creep in, whether you're an 18 handicap or one of the top golfers in the world. The doubt gets there, and it kind of affects all of us almost the same, doesn't it?
Yeah, you know what's funny to you guys is that it's not about making putts either. You see I think Jordan's one of the best at this, and I say best not as it's a good thing, but it's a bad thing that, you know, he'll hit putts. Sometimes he's walking before the ball even hits the putter. Like he already knows
he missed it, right?
Yeah. He's a bunch where he's on a downstroke, and all of a sudden he's walking like he knows he missed it.
Yeah.
So it really comes to, you want to know that when I hit a putt, it's going to come off exactly like I'm where I want it to. So it's not necessary because we don't control anything beyond the strike. Okay. Once the ball is gone, it could hit spike marks. You know, we just misread it, which is not a tool issue. It's a mind or mental or feel issue. But if you misread it, you know, by an inch or a little soft, a little hard, whatever. But you want to know that if you put a little a dime 1 foot in front of your ball in the living room at your house, that when you hit a little putt and you just want, all you want to do is roll it over that dime, over the center of the dime, so it doesn't bounce right or left, it goes straight over it. Once you get that putter, then you can make anything, right? And you can make, if you have a 20-foot putt and it doesn't go in, but in your mind you go, I hit that perfectly, it actually brings you some encouragement. You know, it's the putt that you hit, a putter that you hit, and it's coming off a little different every time. That's what drives you crazy. And so you're trying to find it. And so you have face balance putters and you have toe hang putters. And you have some toe hang putters that don't hang as much, some that hang a lot, some that are like almost 90 degrees straight down toe hang, and then some that are kind of in between at 45 degrees. And you got the face balance, right? And so all those kind of putters, they create a different feel in your hands. That being said, if you're carrying all three different types of putters, you're searching, right? And that's, you know, a guy has a mallet and a Ping Zing 2 in his bag. I mean, those are going to feel so different that it's no longer an extension of your arms. You know, Jordan's putter, the one he's putted with forever, with the exception, I think he took a couple weeks off with it, to him, it's an extension of his arms. That's why he's a great putter. It just feels like he's actually putting with the back of his hand as opposed to something that's 35 inches below his hands. And so you've got to find something you like, and then you stick to it. But it's interesting how even the greatest players in the world will struggle. You know, we have different tools, right? The NBA, they have one basketball. Everybody uses it, right? Baseball, it's the same baseball. It feels the same in everybody's hand. One might be a little more rubbed down, but it's a baseball. Football, it's the football, right? Sometimes, you know, I'm sure Tony Romo would say that football that he tried to hold in against Seattle was a little more slick, and it went through his hands. But other than that, it's a football.
Sometimes it has less air. Sometimes it has less air.
Less air, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry for going there, by the way. That still haunts me. I'm sure it haunts him. But the but in golf, our ball is the same, but clubs are all different, right? Which is really kind of strange. And to have that new red putter that we keep seeing, the TaylorMade, I don't even know what it's called, but it's red. Everybody seems to make putts with those red TaylorMade putters. Pretty awesome. But then if you have a Ping Zing 2 in your bag as well, then it's going to feel so different. It weighs like a pound less, and it's got, the toe wants to flip around like a door, and so it's weird. But anyway, golf is strange. Golfers are strange. We're always trying to find something that works, especially for the guys on the fringe of greatness, the rest of the guys on the PGA Tour. But those other guys, Rory wants to be the number one player in the world again. So he thinks that it's the equipment. And it could be the equipment, right? It could be. Zach Johnson... Right. It could be the equipment. You know, did he all of a sudden stop being great, or could it be the equipment? You know, we've seen that forever. You know, did Ping make me a good player? And then when I left Ping, I stopped being a good player. Well, there's a possibility there, right? Who knows? But the good ones, they want to get back to being great. And I think that's why you can't hold a good man down for too long. I think Rory will be right back in the thick of things and battling DJ. Someone's going to take the number one ranking away from DJ eventually.
I'll tell you what would be great is, and I think what everybody would like to see, is a U.S. Open, a British Open coming up, Open Championship, big tournaments where it comes down to Spieth and Day and DJ head-to-head, or Rory against DJ head. Those guys, and it just doesn't seem like we've had those showdowns. It's one of those guys a lot of times and someone else that we're not thinking of, a Brian Harman or Daniel Berger or whatever. But I think that would be the drama that everybody would love in place of Tiger. If it was Tiger and anybody else, that was the drama we had for 20 years. Now I think what people are craving is, boy, let's just see some of these great guys, like the ones we're always hearing, but they never seem to get in the finals against each other, right? We loved Phil and Tiger, and it happened occasionally, but not an awful lot. But that's what I'm hoping for. I'd love to see what those guys all put it together at the same time with a lot on the line back in the Nicklaus days with Trevino and Weisskopf and Johnny Miller and all the other great guys. That's what we want to see. And so maybe we will. I mean, we'll see. It'd just be nice if they all kind of at the same time, maybe in a couple of weeks in England, all pulled it together and thought, wow, look at that leaderboard. Look at those guys in the final grouping, final four guys
are
all going to be that. But that would be awesome.
So a fairy tale for you would be like a six-man playoff with Day and Rory and Jordan and Justin Thomas and DJ. That'd be awesome, right? Like
and
a six-man playoff that goes 11 holes.
Over the other.
Yeah, no, no.
And they
no.
all birdie every hole, and finally DJ drives a 400-yard hole and makes a hole one to win.
Yeah. Something like that.
Put a lock on that beer writer. Put a lock on Tim's beer writer.
Yeah,
please.
I like that.
Oh man.
Hey, Paul, we appreciate your time, man. Thanks for being with us. Best of luck continued with PJ Tour Radio and Sirius XM and all the work you're doing there.
Yeah, you're doing great. We love listening to you.
Get out and play.
Yeah.
Well, thanks. I'll be doing PJ Tour Live for the Greenbrier on Thursday, Friday, and then I'll be doing PJ Tour Radio, Sirius XM for the John Deere the next week. So I got a couple weeks in a row back in the media, which is good. Looking forward to it.
Sounds good. We'll look forward to listening to you for sure.
Paul.
Thanks,
we
Paul.
Appreciate it.
All right, boys.
Thanks, man.
Thank you.
See ya.
All right. Take care. All right. Paul Tanskowski. Easy for me to say.
All righty then. Put that upper plate back
veteran
in.
Veteran on the PGA Tour and doing a lot of broadcasting. So yeah, he is a philosopher though, isn't he, Frank?
I tell you what though, he's also a stand-up comic. Okay,
he gets into.
He got me at the PGA show, and you remember that. So, telling the story of his great grandfather coming over from Italy, you know, oh my lord, had me going like 5 minutes. We're on the air,
tears coming down your cheek.
Yeah, I mean, I was getting choked up, and it was all a ruse. it was crazy.
Yeah.
And that Francis Edwards, the name of his company, by the way. And they make exotic belts and exotic
leather goods.
Yeah, all different things. Leather goods, scorecard covers, and
kind of your front pocket wallets that are so popular. Your money clips that you have that you can get out of Eel and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, Francis Edward is the name of the company.
FrancisEdward.com, I guess. It's really cool stuff. Yeah.
Yep.
Really cool.
It is. And so we'd like to have some more of that stuff too. At the very end. is what I really mean. I just think that the tour's fine. It's not like we're missing a lot.
But
I do think we're missing some of those big guys going head-to-head. I just love to see somebody winning an Open Championship like you used to see Arnie beating Jack or Jack beating Trevino, you know, in those
– Trevino, and Watson,
holding out – but you know, on at Pebble Beach to beat Jack. And you just don't see Rory beating Dustin in a head-to-head or Spieth beating Day – in those, and I'm not sure why. I mean, heck, we were talking about it last week even. Three of the top guys didn't even make the cut at this year's U.S. Open.
That was brutal.
So you're kind of going, well, that's hard to make it into Sunday's final round when you don't even make it to Saturday. So I'm not sure why they can't all at one time, you know, play as well as they all have the ability to play. But maybe,
you know who could answer that on another show? Dr. Bob Winters.
Who's that?
I think Dr. Bob Winters could give us some insight into that. Why don't we put that on the slate for this week and get Dr. Bob back in and ask that question of him?
We can get him.
He'll come on. Dr. Bob's great.
What Paul was just talking about is true, and it is also true that I think a lot of us scratch our heads when we're like, well, why is Rory questioning this? I mean, Rory's got to know he's that talented. Dustin shouldn't be missing cuts and missing fairways in greens as wide as Aaron Hill's greens, I mean fairways were. Why would he not?
Well, you know,
be able
now
to get all those drives.
Hold
right
on,
so
hold on, wait a minute.
Things.
No, when you walk onto the tee box as your average golfer, okay, we're average golfers. I look at a great big wide fairway and I go, oh, all right, let me get me some of this one. And I just crank it up about three more notches. And what happens? Spray and pray, baby. It's gone. And that, don't you think that's what they did too? Because they said, all right, I can really rip on this. This fairway's a mile wide. And they started spraying it out of the fairway.
Maybe, but at the same time, I do also have the feeling that they do it so much more and it's such a higher level than us that even if they have that feeling, they should still be able to do it. I get that you and I can't just because we want to, but I don't get how, I mean, Rory made the point of going back to Erin Hills of if you're missing these fairways as wide as they are and you're going to complain about how tall the grass is, he goes, you're 60 yards left. You should be in tall grass. And yet there he found himself in that same tall grass that he thought was so almost impossible for the tour players to hit on a regular basis. So it is what it is, and Paul would be the first to say that's because it's golf, and golf is one of those you just never really know. So
Paul Stankowski sold himself a little short today too. I mean, Paul Stankowski is a fabulous golfer. I mean, there's no doubt about it.
Yeah.
And I'm looking forward to him on PGA Tour Champions. Yeah. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to that.
I believe he's 47.
Yeah.
Yeah, 47 now, so I think he's got a few years, and he said he's going to gear up for it and get ready for it a couple years out. He had a few years kind of between there, and that's why I've always said maybe it should be younger because there is that gap for a lot of those guys.
Never going to happen.
Maybe not competing anymore at 42, 43.
Nope.
But, boy, I got 7, 8 years to get to
that's brutal. Well, like Boo. Boo Weekly is 43. He's 43. Like 7
Boo.
Years.
So Boo was hanging, but it's like, boy, I'm sure he'd be I'd be right up there with Bernhardt if I could play with those guys, but I got to wait 7 more years to try to beat Jordan Spieth. You know, the guys are half his age.
And the kids who are in school right now that are coming out, the mini Spieths and the mini McElroys and all that. By the way,
your old Miss boy.
Oh yeah, that's a swing. Right. That's a homemade swing.
Yeah.
Don't change it. That's what I like about the fact that you know we went through a time where everybody was saying. You got to swing like this guy. You got to have this perfect swing like Iron Byron, you know, perfect. Well, no, you can't.
Yeah.
Certain body types won't allow that to happen. And a lot of games and amateur games were ruined and the sport was spoiled for a lot of people because of some of the teaching that was going on at that point in time. Now we're back to the Butch Harmon style. Hey, let's just take what you got and let's tweak it just a touch, make it a little better and give you some opportunity to have some fun and make a dollar or two. So, you know, just don't beat
the
Padre.
Any golfer will. I'll leave everybody with this thought. I think the key thing that anybody ever says, if you hear from the great teachers and from Hank Haney and Steve Johnson to Butch Harmon and Cameron McCormick and everybody else, is repeatable. And that's the bottom line.
That's
it. You can repeat your swing, and if it looks as crazy and weird as anybody's, as long as you repeat it time after time, that's the key. And the people that can do that, even if they have a weird-looking swing and you play with them on Sunday, they'll beat you because you're going, I can't believe that. But sure enough, he keeps hitting them down the fairway. And you keep thinking it's luck, but it's not luck. He just knows how to hit that shot. That's his shot. And it's a weird-looking over the top or it comes from underneath or he does whatever. But if he hits it solid every time, so that's the goal for everybody, right? Just keep
hitting
whatever
luck.
The shot you have. And you'll be better off.
Luck is preparation.
By the way,
opportunity, by the way. Preparation, meeting, opportunity is what's called luck.
There
you go. Sage wisdom.
I want to say I got my vertical groove driver, Frank.
Need to go hit it. Go hit that thing. See what you think.
I got my vertical groove. And
it's nice.
Bob Bupka, thanks to Bob Bupka.
Thank you, Bob.
For sending it to you and I.
Yeah.
We both have our vertical groove driver. I just got mine yesterday, so I haven't hit it yet.
VertGolf, VertGolf.com. Well, the packaging, I told you, the packaging is incredible. Did you open your head cover? Have you looked in the head cover?
Is that where my thing was, right?
Your bag tag with your name on it should be in there.
Yeah.
It has your name engraved. Yeah.
My name's kind of spelled funky, too. I got two M's and Tim.
Did they spell it correctly?
And they got it right. Yes.
All right.
And almost everybody self-corrects that one for themselves. They're like, well, he's got to be stupid. He put two M's in there. He didn't mean to do that. Like, I don't know how to spell my name. So they fix it. They put one M. These guys at Burton's group spelled it right.
All right. So before we go, you played in a charity event yesterday, and you didn't win it. So I'm disappointed. So, you know, this side of the river won it, and your side of the river didn't. So I'm one up on you.
It was a good tournament, though. Helped people with leukemia and lymphoma.
Society. Oh, great.
And so it was a very, very good cause. And they raised an awful lot of money, and that was really cool. And we had a good time, and the weather was nice.
And you played with
it's not all about winning. I'm not even sure.
You played with our buddy Celebrity from the movie Blazing Saddles and many other films and TV shows.
Played with Bert and Gilliam.
Yeah.
Bert and Gilliam. You know what he told me? It's a funny story. He still gets, and he claims, I guess it's probably true, he says that Blazing Saddles is number one by a mile as the most viewed, is that the right way to put it, most run, if you will, movie in history. Like all over the world, Blazing Saddles runs and is
I don't doubt it.
In any other movie.
I don't doubt it.
So he says
it's hilarious.
I get royalty checks all the time. He gets royalty checks all the time, Frank, from all these different cable companies from all over the world. He says, I got one the other day from Denmark. You know how much it was?
What?
47 cents.
Well, that's okay. It cost him more than that.
He got a royalty check for 40.
Hey,
in
Nashville.
From Denmark.
In Nashville. You know, I'm from the music world originally. In Nashville, we call it mailbox money. That's what it is. Royalties are mailbox money. Yeah. Go to the mailbox and pick up a check.
Sure.
Wish I'd written White Christmas. You know, come on, man.
Yeah.
That's mailbox money.
Sitting on a beach somewhere.
Or sitting on the dock of the bay.
Yeah. And he gets it, but it's not an awful lot sometimes. He kind of laughs at the body. He goes, I kind of wait for him to add up before it's worth taking him to the bank. He goes, sometimes it's $12.06. It's $37. It's $6. He goes, it's just weird numbers that just kind of – and he has no idea. I never understood the accounting of that either. But anyway, he gets these funny royalty checks. He said one time he was on Evening Shade, if you remember that show.
Absolutely, with Burt Reynolds, yeah.
And and Burt Reynolds' name is Burt – I'm making this up, but it's something like Burt Leon Reynolds – and Burton Gilliam's name is Burt Leonard Gilliam. It's almost kind of the similar names. And he said, I got a royalty check from that TV show, from Evening Shade, for Burt Leon Reynolds. He goes, and it was only for like $60-something dollars or $40. It wasn't even a lot. He goes, I just cashed it.
Did he call Burt?
He goes, I didn't send it to him.
He didn't give it to Burt?
No, he said, I didn't send it to him. No. He said he called him. Yeah, he said, I called him and told him I cashed it. He said, I took it to the bank. And Burt Reynolds started laughing. He goes, go ahead. Anything that gets sent to you, go to the bank with it. So, anyway, Burt Gilliam, we'll have him on the show maybe in the next week or so.
Yeah, let's get him on. He's
talk about his Blazing Saddle days and stuff. Funny guy.
Yeah, it's by the way, we talk about Blazing Saddles a lot. Just to be very clear, every ethnicity is hammered in that movie. I mean, it's not a movie about one thing. They hammer everybody.
Yeah.
And Mel Brooks had a co-writer on that movie named Richard Pryor. So you can imagine how crazy that movie is if you haven't seen it.
So it's off-color humor, you might say. But it does offend, as Mel Brooks would say, it was an equal offending movie. We offended everybody.
Everybody.
Different religions, different races.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody.
It just hammers everybody.
It's kind of a classic.
Yeah. It is a classic.
Yeah.
Kind of like Tin Cup. You know, Tin Cup's kind of a classic. So.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're just rambling, so we probably, I don't know, what do you think? You think we need to go or
let's go.
Do another show? Okay, so just housekeeping real quick housekeeping, Vert Golf, VERTGolf.com, check them out. We have ours, you get yours. And Golf Genius Software, also GolfGenius.com, our friends there, check them out. And you take us out of here, Tim.
I think that should about do it. Thank you to Paul Stankowski for being with us today. Brian Bassett, I'm Tim Matthews. Thanks, everybody. We do appreciate it. Join us next time right here on Golf Talk America.